everybody. Cal Banyan here with Cal Banyan's Hypnosis, Etc. with Meredith Locker. We're here to give you all kinds of fun, informative, and important information that you can use in your practice. Let's see. If you're watching this video anywhere else except calbanyan.com, go there right now, because right below this video, we have extra resources and information and links and graphics and stuff like that that just will add a lot of value to the videos. By the way, we have already well over 100 hypnosis training videos on calbanyan.com. So go there. You could spend the whole day. Heck, you could probably spend the whole week. Let me introduce to you right now my superstar co-host, Meredith Locker. Meredith has, before she came to hypnosis, she was a regular old talk therapist with a master's degree. One of her specialties was eating disorders, and now she's been totally converted to the hypnosis side of life, and she is completely one percenter, and she's best of the best hypnosis professional in Los Angeles, California. And if I had someone who wanted hypnosis services in the LA area, she's definitely the one I would suggest that they go see. How you doing, Meredith?
I'm great, Cal. How are you doing?
Great.
Beautiful. Well, you know what? I would send clients to you in Tustin, California. Although, I'd have to warn them, you know, he's tough. He's definitely tough. Cal is just the top of the one percenters. He has written several books. He's brought to us Five Path, which is the process I use with my clients every single time. Seventh Path Self-Hypnosis, which I teach as often as possible. And I just am really grateful for you, Cal. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Hey, let me make a couple of announcements. I always try to make it quick. I'm digging around here for my notes. All right. I'll just read them off my computer. Guess what? I got a class coming up, but you gotta hurry. It's October 9th to the 23rd with the weekend off. It's the NGH-approved Banyan Hypnosis Super Certification Course. You get the 5-path, you get the 7-path, you get all the way from basic, intermediate, advanced, and we always want you to get in there as soon as you can because, I want to make sure there's a seat for you. Also, I didn't mention it last week, but we have, if you're kind of a computer person and you'd like to take the class online, we can set that up live, hands-on, interactive. It's a great way to do it if you don't want to spend the money on travel and food and lodging. You can do it right from your office or home. You have to have a good internet connection and a computer that's working in top-notch condition. Also, we have the Week of Power Training. That's November, I think it's 8th through the 14th. And that's for you folks who are already trained and certified. And you want to get 5-path, 7-path, and those advanced techniques and really go to the next level. Be on your way to being a 1%er yourself. And as I mentioned for the very first time last episode, I'm going to Singapore and I'm going to Malaysia. Now, the Singapore trip I'm going to be doing in conjunction with the Malaysia trip. In Singapore, I'm going to be teaching the ultimate recognitions. That's part of the 7-path self-hypnosis program. And in Malaysia, I'm going to Johor Bahru. And there I'm going to be teaching, for the very first time, the full NGH-approved Banyan Hypnosis Super Course. Just same one we do here, except it's going to be in Malaysia. That's all for my announcements. I would like you also to follow me on twitter.com/Cal Banyan. We can just keep in touch. We can, what they call DM and at message back and forth. And our show continues to have more and more fans. Please fan us at facebook.com/hypnosisETC, which is short for hypnosis, etc. So that's www.facebook.com/hypnosisETC, and you'll get in on all of the insiders conversation that we have and specials and things like that. All right. I think that now Meredith is ready to reveal some of the things I promised you would reveal this episode. How's it going, Meredith?
It's going great. I'm excited about this subject matter, Cal.
Huh?
I'm excited about this.
You should be.
It's fun.
You can save lives. Speaking of saving lives, I promised that you would disclose a famous musician and singer who passed away because of an eating disorder, which is the topic of this series of episodes.
Yes, and I'm really happy that you're not going to make me sing one of their songs, because that would be frightening.
Can you name one of their songs?
No. I probably could if I sat and thought about it a little bit. I actually kind of like their music. We Only Just Begun, is that one of theirs?
I think so.
Karen Carpenter.
Karen Carpenter,
yeah,
that's right.
And actually, where I used to work in the residential treatment center, it's located in the same little tract neighborhood as where she lived and where she lived when she died. Interesting, huh? But yeah, she had a really rough road. And the really tragic thing about her is that she had finally decided to turn it around and was actually getting healthy at the time that she ended up having, I believe it was a heart attack that ultimately killed her. And she just had damaged her body too much with all of her restricting and couldn't come back from it. And it was too late when she decided to turn things around.
That's really sad.
Yep.
You know what? Can you kind of tell me about maybe some sports areas where, like, if someone comes in and they're a sports person, particular areas of sports or maybe even professions where eating disorders are a real danger?
Yeah, absolutely. These days I'm seeing actually eating disorders in most sports, but they are predominantly in gymnasts, in ballerinas, in jockeys, of course. They've got to be real. Anything weight related where they have to stay under a certain weight. Even boxers sometimes at the lower levels of weight, the kind of the featherweight classes are known to develop eating disorders to stay under that level. Wrestlers. And once again, they usually have to make weight, and it's important with their body. Anything endurance-oriented, so the runners, especially the long-distance runners, swimmers. What else? Am I missing anything else you can think of, Cal?
I just know that in my practice, I've seen it a lot with wrestlers, even high school wrestlers, and anybody that has to make weight, you know, boxers, wrestlers, that kind of thing.
Yep, I agree completely. And as far as professions go, of course, models. First and foremost, I don't really know a model who doesn't have some sort of either an eating disorder or extremely disordered eating, where they may be on the borderline of where they're not really diagnosable, but they're very close to it. Most of them are actually easily identified as being anorexic according to their body weight alone. Of course, anybody who's in TV or film, whether they're an actor or they're some sort of a personality, anytime you're going to be on camera a lot and you get to see yourself on camera a lot, there's kind of an obsession with the way that you present on film and in pictures. Any kind of public figure, any kind of profession where it's important to be pretty perfectionistic, there can be eating disorders. Any other professions you can think of, Cal?
That's it. I think that pretty much covers it.
All right. So we left off last segment with essentially I was going through a lot of different kinds of eating disorders that there are, and so I'm going to move on and get into some more detail now. And now the predominant eating disorders are of course anorexia and bulimia, and then there's a long list of other possibilities. One thing that's important to know is that they're not completely separate. I've always seen anorexia and bulimia as more of a continuum, with anorexia, the extreme restricting anorexic being on one end and the extreme binging purging bulimic on the other end. And most people fall somewhere on the spectrum where they at times have some of the behaviors of the other disorder. And oftentimes when somebody is trying to overcome whatever it is that there's their initial challenges, so say you start out as an anorexic and you try to get over that and start eating again, then because they've been keeping food away from themselves for so long, the natural survival instinct might kick in and they may go into binging. And sometimes it's just really a natural instinct that happens as a compensation kind of a measure in our bodies. And they might go into binging, and then of course with their fear of gaining weight, then they'll start purging and kind of go to being more of a bulimic technically than an anorexic. And they can swing back and forth many times throughout the course of treatment. It's very common. Now, there are other disorders, other diagnoses, if you will, that clients might come in with that kind of tend to be seen in people who have eating disorders. Not always, but they tend at times to be kind of commingled with or combined with. It's a dual diagnosis kind of a situation. One of the biggest ones is depression. Most people who have eating disorders are depressed, but Cal and I know, and a lot of you know, if you know the secret language of feelings, you know that ultimately Basically, depression is a healthy state, a place that you go to so that you can stop long enough to figure out a better way. And it's a tertiary feeling. It's the third place that you go to when you've had the original feeling that you don't like and you've used the distractor of the eating disorder and it hasn't worked. And eventually, you go to the secondary level, the secondary feeling of frustration. And you still have the primary feeling. You now have frustration because what you've been doing hasn't been working, but you don't know any better, so you keep doing what you've been doing. And then eventually, if you do that long enough, you'll go to the third level, which is the depression. And so it's very common and it's understandable, especially if they've been anorexic or bulimic or had one of these eating disorders for a while, that they would have depression as far as we understand it. As far as the psychology world understands it, they just see them as kind of biologically running hand in hand. Anything to add to that, Cal?
Actually, I was just sitting here playing a little bass.
Oh, good.
How you doing? I mean, it's just, all that talk about the Carpenters, and I thought it would be fun to just play a really little bass for a while. I'm sorry. Actually, I am staying right with you, and I was just hoping you would get to that part that most people with the eating disorders, if it's been going on long enough, are depressed. And we know that depression is really, really dangerous, right?
It is.
And it, why?
Essentially, because it can lead to taking your own life.
That's right. That's right. Good. Please continue.
Okay. So in addition to depression, and sometimes along with depression, and sometimes, you know, apart from depression, we find anxiety. And now that doesn't surprise us either if we know the secret language of feelings, because what is anxiety at its core? It's fear. And ultimately, when we dig down deep with age regression, what do we usually find at the bottom of it? Ultimately, fear. And so, you know, they've developed this problem for a reason, and most likely it was a feeling they didn't like, and most likely fear is at the core, and so why wouldn't there be some anxiety along with it? That's no surprise to those of us who know the secret language of feelings. But it does tend to be quite seen differently by the psychology field. Obsessive compulsive disorder is something that can run kind of hand in hand with it. There are a lot of different ways that that presents. It's not all hand washing and germ phobia, although that can be part of it. It can also be rituals. It can be needing to be sure to do certain things in a certain order. So the ordering of things, it can be rechecking things, and you know, maybe when somebody is adding up or balancing their checkbook, they might have to do it three times instead of just doing it once. All of those kinds of things can go kind of into the pot of obsessive compulsive disorder, amongst other things. Substance abuse. We're seeing more and more substance abuse these days in people with eating disorders. That used to be pretty separate. It was kind of considered the good girl's disease before. And, you know, for the most part, that's still what you find. It's the person that chooses the more socially acceptable means of distracting or means of trying to feel like they're in control rather than going straight to drugs. But drugs are so readily available these days, even the prescription drugs, that people are finding that, you know, drugs can help them to stay thin. And so it's not uncommon for both anorexics and bulimics to get their hands on drugs and have some sort of issue with that. Alcohol, of course, numbing the pain that they feel. No surprise there. Bipolar disorder, sometimes we see that with the depression and the mania is what bipolar is. And, you know, that's just, you know, kind of a furtherance of the depression. So it's just another manifestation of the depression where there is some mania that shows. Sleep disturbance is very common, and so you're going to get a lot of clients that have trouble sleeping. Not at all a surprise with eating disorders. Self-mutilation. You may find clients who have been cutting or in some way hurting their bodies on top of their eating disorder. Trichotillomania, one of your favorite words, right, Cal?
I love trichotillomania.
Which is hair pulling. And so somebody might pull their eyelashes, their eyebrows, or their hair itself. And so we tend to, you know, we can, not always, but we can find that.
Let me ask you a question. If they eat the hair, would that be pica?
Indeed. Good job. You have been listening.
Trichotillomania pica.
Let's find a few more favorite words to add together, shall
we? So you thought I wasn't paying attention.
I know you are. Okay. And then, of course, this is debatable, but most people in the field of eating disorders do believe that sexual abuse is often involved. What I find is it's not always a cause, but it does often happen in some way, shape, or form with eating disorders. I would say maybe 40% of people with eating disorders have had some sort of sexual abuse issue. Now, because people with eating disorders tend, like a lot of people out there, tend to have low self-esteem, but they've taken it to a whole nother level. And when you have low self-esteem and you get into the point of having dating relationships, things like date rape or you know, not being able to say no is an issue for a lot of people with eating disorders. They tend to be people pleasers. And so, you know, sexual abuse after the initial cause is not uncommon. But at times, it is also the cause. Anything else to add about that, Cal?
This is really interesting. I think that this is going to really open the eyes of people who are not educated in this area. And I'm wondering, are you going to, in this episode, get to talking about such things as, with all these different types of eating disorders, does the hypnotherapist need to have different approaches, or is there one approach that covers it all? And also, is there different things you have to do in, like, the pre-hypnosis interview? You kind of get the gist of what I'm saying.
Yep, I'm getting there.
Okay, and in this episode, right?
I'm heading towards it.
Okay.
We're on our way. Let me just tell you a little bit about some of the traits of people with eating disorders. You'll tend to find that they're perfectionistic, highly perfectionistic, very hard on themselves. They tend to be high-achieving people who are very intelligent and typically in towards the top of whatever it is that they do. So they're either you know, in the top of their class and educationally speaking. If they are involved in some sort of a sport or dance or something like that, they are in a position where there's a lot of pressure on them to be good, because they are good enough where they could be one of the best. And so not only do they put a lot of pressure on themselves, but their parents tend to put a lot of pressure on them as well, which often tends to be one of the challenges and one of the causes. They are people pleasers, as I mentioned, and so, except when it comes to food. Now, when it comes to food, because that's their area of control, they tend to put their foot down with trying to please other people. But they do tend to want to please people, which will make them compliant, but not necessarily mean, right, Cal, that they're going to be more suggestible. But they will at least follow your instructions well, at least as well, if not better, than most clients that you have. They tend to be very black and white thinkers, very kind of rigid with their thinking. It's that all or nothing thinking. And so as I'll get into that a little bit later about how it's important as part of your process to try to show them the gray area. And that might take place in the informing child technique. That might take place even in some of your pre-hypnosis interview reframing. You know, there are all kinds of places within your process where you can help them to see the middle road, the gray area. Anorexics tend to kind of be people who don't want to grow up. They want to keep their bodies young. They may have an extreme challenge or problem with their menstruation, whether they have not yet started menstruating and they're afraid of starting, and this is for women, and now there are men and boys who do have anorexia, and this would, of course, not be the case for them. And they would have more issues with their body hair if they're this type of anorexic. So there may be issues surrounding the menstruation and really just a disgust with themselves if they actually are menstruating. Bulimics tend, if it's a typical bulimic, tends to be more of the risk taker, tends to be the one who would abuse drugs more likely, potentially sexually promiscuous, and you know, they're the ones that are a little bit more adventurous, let's put it that way. Kind of, they can think out of the box a little bit more, but all of them are very highly intelligent. It's rare that you find somebody with an eating disorder that isn't very bright. And so their ability to follow instructions and focus and all of that is really good. Now, one challenge that you might find with people with eating disorders, if they're really heavily engaging in their disorder when they come to you, is that they're not eating enough or sleeping enough to be able to focus properly. Have you found this, Cal, at all in your experiences?
I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
Oh, you, Cal. I was talking about how sometimes people with eating disorders are not eating enough because they're malnourished, and because they're sleep-deprived, they may not be able to pay good enough attention to be able to lead them into hypnosis. I was saying that this is a challenge somebody might find.
Actually, I was just kidding. I'm always paying attention. I hang on your every word, Meredith.
Well.
Yeah, that would be rude. Let me just say that, you know, there's such a wide variety of situations, and you're so right, they blend together, and I have had people that, especially those who are consuming enough, to fall asleep during sessions. You know, just not have the energy to focus. I think you're exactly right.
Yeah. And see, what might happen for a lot of you, because I've heard this, I've seen this on the groups where there's kind of talk of concern about medications, and it's not uncommon that these clients come in on various antidepressants and anti-anxiety, amongst other things, kinds of medications. And so a lot of people might automatically think that if they're having some sort of trouble with the client, either keeping them awake or, you know, getting them to where you need them to go to do age regression, that the problem is the medication. And in my experience, that is not the problem. It is typically with eating disorder clients more of a problem of an imbalance, of a nutritional imbalance or a sleep deprivation that is more the challenge. So I share that with you just so you don't kind of, you know, make assumptions kind of going in a different direction. Now, can hypnosis resolve eating disorders? Yes, and it absolutely does. And, you know, in my experience, I have been more capable of resolving eating disorders using 5-PATH than I have using all of the other tools in my arsenal as a psychotherapist. And it's just really exciting to be able to stop thinking in terms of, on average, it takes 7 years to resolve an eating disorder, if that. And a lot of people can't have them resolved. And to go from that mindset to going into using hypnosis and actually resolving it in, you know, 5 to 7, 8, maybe at most, sessions. It's really exciting. Before I get into more discussion, just to share a little brief information about a case study, a lady that I worked with a year ago, and I actually just followed up with her, so she was fresh in my mind. 47-year-old woman who has battled with bulimia for 27 years. She started around the time she was 19 or 20 and has binged and purged consistently on a daily basis for 27 years. She's a wife, she has kids, she's a nurse, she is functioning, but has lived with this shame and this guilt and, you know, the horrifying knowledge that she is damaging her body. As a nurse, she knew what she was headed for, that she may not see her kids have kids and all of those kinds of things. And so she finally came to me, and she actually came quite a distance to see me, which was great. And what we found as we did age regression was her ISE was when her brother was born. And she is a very driven, very focused, very responsible person, and she seemed to have been born kind of with those characteristics, and she took her job as being the guardian of her brother so seriously that it pushed her into a space of ultimately having the eating disorder. It was kind of her backlash for all the pressure that she put on herself. And ultimately, we actually did informing soul technique. She was of the belief system where we were able to do that, spiritually speaking. Cal, do you need to mention anything about that?
Well, one of the things I would talk about is we always have to keep in mind that not everybody that listens to this is a 5-PATH trained hypnotherapist. So if you could just give a really brief thumbnail sketch about what 5-PATH is, and when you use terms like ISC, if you could just say what that is.
Okay. So the very fast version is it's 5 different phases. The first phase is preparation, testing, and convincing. And this is involving, you know, dispelling any misperceptions about hypnosis and preparing the client properly for the hypnotic process. Typically involves the first session and typically involves direct suggestion, although not always. Sometimes you can get right into age regression. Second phase, which isn't always the second session, is age regression, and that can take anywhere from 1 session to several sessions, or to even quite a few sessions, depending on the client and their issues and all of that. The third phase is forgiveness of others, and this is where we help to resolve feelings of anger, predominantly. Age regression, we're working to resolve feelings of fear and sadness, predominantly. So the back into the third phase, forgiveness of others. And so we resolve feelings of anger towards other people, people specifically that were involved with the issue at hand, and then getting into pretty much everybody. And then the fourth is forgiveness of self, helping to resolve feelings of guilt. And then getting into fifth phase, if necessary, is parts mediation therapy, resolving secondary gain issues, that kind of thing. Now, when I talk about the ISE, it's the initial sensitizing event. And so that would be the first time that that person felt the feeling that was attached to their disorder. Okay, and so that was not the symptom producing event, which is something that usually comes later and ties that feeling to the behavior, but it's the initial event where the fear, for instance, comes out in the first place. What else have I not shared, Cal?
I think that's great. We kind of have to keep that in mind when we start talking about using our little insider things like ISC and Foo and FOSS and PMT and stuff like that.
I was hoping you would do it. You're so much better at it than me.
Oh, I know, but I've talked about this stuff for years. I like hearing it from you.
Okay, beautiful. And so as far as working with the client itself, herself, she was very motivated. And now one thing, I'm back to this case study, by the way.
Oh, can you tell me a little bit? I think we left off, you did some informing soul work with her?
Yes. Okay. I'll go back there. Cal always likes to go in order. I'm a little more jump about-ish. So the informing soul technique is a beautiful technique that Cal also teaches, and there will be information right down there and links if you're watching this on calbanion.com. But essentially, it's about taking the client to before they took form in this body, before their soul came into this body, and it requires a belief in existence prior to coming into this physical form. And in this particular client did have that belief, and so I did take her there. And ultimately, what we found was, as a soul, she had contracted to watch out for her brother, who has had several lifetimes of having a really hard time overcoming his karmic issues and his issues himself. And so she contracted to be this person. And she took it so seriously that she ended up developing the eating disorder as a compensatory measure, essentially. And so after doing informing soul technique and after resolving her feelings and perceptions around the birth of her brother, and after seeing that she actually has done everything that she contracted to do, and she has been fulfilling her purpose, and everything is as it should be, and then we were able to give her the direct suggestion after that, at this point where she's highly suggestible because she's had these insights. She had such amazing results, and she just continues to grow. I just checked in with her last week, actually, and she's still not binging and still not purging, and her relationships are all improving with her kids and with her husband. It's just a beautiful story, and she's so grateful to have been able to find this process. I mean, she had been 27 years on and off in treatment, and it took 5 sessions of 5 Path to resolve her issue.
Beautiful. How are we doing on time?
I think it's time for us to wrap this one up. I've got a lot more to share, though, so I hope you guys keep tuning in. Coming up, we're going to get into the common issues at the heart of eating disorders. We're going to talk a little bit about when working with eating disorders, kind of what to do, what to expect, and some things I do when I work with people with eating disorders. And then if you're all good, then I might even share another case history. I'm Meredith Locker, and I'm signing off. My website address is yourpathhypnosis.com. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and I'll see you all soon.
And I want to thank you for taking the extra time to, put this series together for us all. I think it's really nice for all of our viewers to really get something that's different. I think this is going to be very useful for them, too, as we wrap it up.
I hope so.
Cool. Hey, a couple of little reminders. We're doing the dead celebrity case histories. We're still going to do that, but we're collecting a number of ideas. We've had some ideas like Marilyn Monroe and John F. Kennedy and Elvis Presley and Howard Hughes. And what we're going to do is we're going to talk about what it would be like to be working with these people to help them. So send in your suggestions. You can put them right below this video in the comments area, or you can put them in on our fan page, which is facebook.com/hypnosis, etc. That's hypnosis ETC. Also, for the very first time, I announced it last time, maybe it was the time before, we now have a distance learning course for hypnosis and hypnotherapy certification with 5-Path and 7-Path. It's amazing. I think it's going to be a big hit. Also, if you're interested in getting yourself healthier, leaner, stronger, and wealthier, then email me at calbanion@hypnosiscenter.com. I have a phone call with you, spill the beans on the whole thing. And finally, wrapping it up with, visit my website, hypnosiscenter.com. That's where my schedule is, a whole bunch of articles, it's a really great website, and hypnosis.org, more cool stuff, all kinds of things, but you can get yourself listed in our free directory there and join in on the conversation at ourhypnospace.com. So now I'm just going to sit back, play a little bass, a little bit of the bass player here, and see you later. Cal Banion, signing off. This recording is the property of Cal Banion and Cal Banion's Banion Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.